Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 5th, 2019. Where has this year gone? University of Illinois, demand for mental health services surging. 2018 report from the U of I Senate Committee called for more resources on campus. The mental health statistics are startling. In 2018-19, the number of crisis walk-in appointments at the University of Illinois Counseling Center reached 471, up 85% in 2 years. And the number of hospitalizations for students who present a danger to themselves or others rose from 2 per semester 5 years ago to 9 last spring, according to Director Carla McGowan. The statistics reflect a surge in demand for mental health services on campuses nationwide, fueled by rising levels of stress, anxiety, and depression among the college-age population. More students are being seen earlier for problems. The problems themselves are more severe, and there are more students than ever using the Counseling Center services, said a December 2018 report by the U of I Senate Student Life Committee, which called for more staffing and efforts to reduce academic pressure on students. This trend I don't think is unique to the University of Illinois, but it does signal that we need greater resources, said law professor Rumana Alam, who chairs the committee. A U of I student group, Students for Mental Health Reform, planned a protest today to demand more resources for mental health services, though the event was canceled late Wednesday. The group called on the U of I to increase staffing at the Counseling Center, make more appointments available, and hire more licensed psychiatrists. Currently, the campus is down to one psychiatrist, though officials say they're planning to hire 3 more. Demand for services is extremely high on a competitive campus like the U of I, said Megan Lyons, spokeswoman for the student group. The protest was part of a communications class project on social movements, and students chose the topic because every one of them had been affected by it in some way, she said. The Counseling Center first noticed a spike in demand in the 2014-15 school year, and it has increased steadily since, said Nicole Evans, Assistant Director for Outreach and Prevention. The most common problems are anxiety and depression, but the Senate committee's report also cited academic concerns. Students feeling overwhelmed by due dates, the quantity and pressure of and nature of course exams and assignments, and an increased sense of competitiveness and pressure to perform academically. The rising numbers may also be influenced by reduced stigma around mental illness and more outreach by the Counseling Center, it said. This generation of students is a lot more comfortable discussing their mental health, and they're a lot more willing to seek out services, Evans said. Better treatments for serious mental health issues also have allowed students who are bipolar, for example, to attend college and earn degrees, Evans said. The U of I is admitting more students with those conditions, and they're able to manage but still need support. Maybe 10 to 15 years ago, they wouldn't have gone away to college, she said. One of the most consistent complaints from students is a lack of available appointments. Those hoping to get a same-day appointment with a counselor have to call at 8 a.m. and hope for an opening, but the slots fill up fast. It's extremely frustrating, Lyon said, and the problem is growing as enrollment expands. Evans said the Counseling Center recognizes the problem and is adding staff as funding and space allow, but it's limited by space in its current home at the Turner Student Services Building, officials said. Ideally, we'd have enough counselors so that when somebody calls, they can always get in right away, Evans said. About 35% of students get appointments the first time they call, and it's very rare for students to wait more than 2 or 3 days, she said. For a student in crisis, however, that may seem like an eternity. Evans said receptionists are trained to ask students whether they're experiencing an emergency. If so, they meet with a triage team who can do a brief assessment and make arrangements for them to be seen immediately or draw up a short-term plan until they get an appointment, Evans said. The triage team has been expanded to 4 members, up from 1 to 5 years ago, she said. With more than 45,000 students on campus, it's an effective way to get to the students who need us the most, said Loa Mulambawi, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. The campus is also using embedded counselors in specific colleges, starting with 2 in 2017-18, one in the Granger College of Engineering and one at the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Two more were added this fall in the G's College of Business and the Division of General Studies, and the plan is to add two more next year. Students feel more comfortable reaching out to someone familiar with their college, Evans said. The counselors also interact with faculty and staff members, so when they spot a student in trouble, they can seek out help, Mulumbawe said. The counseling center is funded through an annual health fee paid by students, so the campus has to consider the cost-effectiveness of services, Mulumbawe said. Adding new counselors means asking students for more money, he said. The health fee is $238 annually, with $37.71 going to the counseling center and $200.29 to McKinley Health Center. Regarding psychiatry services, Mulumbawe said it's a specialized field and candidates are in high demand nationwide. And in college health centers, can't pay as much as the private sector, he said. The campus has hired a search firm to help replace those two psychiatrists who retired recently and to fill a new position that will be added next year. One-on-one counseling isn't the only solution, McGowan said. Besides group therapy, the counseling center has increased outreach and prevention services, with more workshops on test anxiety, mindfulness, perfectionism, and other topics to teach students resiliency. Results have been very, very positive, she said. Legalized marijuana, Champaign County. Rules decision not expected until spring. Recreational marijuana becomes legal in Illinois in less than a month, but it may be next spring before Champaign County officials establish regulations for cannabis businesses in the county's unincorporated areas. 2 weeks ago, the county board debated a controversial ordinance that would have prohibited such businesses as marijuana craft growers, dispensaries, transporters, infusers, and processors in unincorporated areas such as Penfield and Seymour, and wound up sending it back to a board committee to hammer out a compromise. The board's Environment and Land Use Committee meeting was scheduled to meet tonight, but the meeting was canceled. The committee chairman, Republican Aaron Esrey, said a discussion on a compromise measure won't likely be back before the group until January or February 2020. This week's meeting was canceled due to a lack of location, Esrey said. The room where it would have normally been held was set up for a tax sale Friday, he said. County Zoning Administrator John Hall said there's no immediate rush to take action on marijuana business restrictions before recreational marijuana becomes legal in the state January 1st. I think the reality is no business is going to get their state approval in a very short time, he said. County Executive Darlene Klopel agreed there's no need to hurry. Some board members want more time to discuss the issue with their constituents, and there's a legal process that will need to be followed once a compromise is reached, she said. People may be panicking because January 1st is coming up, Klopel said, but there are still a lot of administrative details to work out. Hall said he is already at work on a compromise measure based on comments made at the November 21st County Board meeting. What he plans to send back to the committee to consider will be a change in the county zoning ordinance that would essentially prohibit marijuana businesses within a mile and a half zones of communities where these businesses aren't wanted. The other major part of the proposed compromise would be allowing marijuana businesses in unincorporated areas that are within a mile and a half of cities and towns that plan to allow those businesses to operate, Hall said. But he said the county's regulations in these particular unincorporated areas would need to match those established in the communities they surround. Since this would require a change in the county zoning ordinance, Hall said, it would have to go through the Environment and Land Use Committee and the proper public hearing process before the Zoning Board of Appeals to give the public a say. By the time all that occurs, it would be at least as late as May before the county takes final action on marijuana business rules, Hall said. Esrey said he would likely live with the kind of compromise measure Hall is drafting, but he doesn't know how board Democrats would respond. Board Democrat Stephanie Furtado said she could probably support a compromise like one suggested at the recent board meeting, that dispensaries be prohibited in unincorporated areas of the county, but other marijuana businesses be allowed. However, she said, once recreational marijuana becomes legal in the state, she also believes people ought to be allowed to do what state laws allow. If people want to participate in a legal business, they should be allowed to, she said. Savoy, Village Board bans all sales. Less than a month before recreational marijuana becomes legal in Illinois, Savoy has decided to ban sales of it within the village limits. At Wednesday's meeting, the village board voted 5-0 to prohibit sales. Trustee Bill Vavrick was absent. The board had voted in October to impose a 3% sales tax on marijuana sales in case a dispensary ever opened in Savoy. But as it didn't expect any interest in one, it held off on voting to ban sales. But last month, someone contacted the village about opening a dispensary, so the board took up the issue again. A couple of weeks ago, I received a call from an interested party that owns a property in the village that is working with a dispensary operation, village manager Dick Helton said before the vote. That person was also looking at properties in Champaign and Urbana. So it's not just Savoy they're looking at, but Savoy is a real possibility. Savoy is no longer a real possibility after Wednesday's vote. Board members continue to express concerns with recreational marijuana, from banking regulations to impaired driving. Trustee A.J. Ruggieri said his no vote came down to what the citizens of Savoy want. Through the correspondence that I've had, as this process has been developing, there have been people who are supportive, and there is a side of it where we'd be getting more revenue that could help, Ruggieri said. But the majority of everyone that I've talked to has basically said that we don't want to present ourselves as that type of community. At Wednesday's meeting, resident Mike Hutchins asked how much revenue Savoy could generate from marijuana sales. That's a very important decision for the board to generate more potential revenue because it's going to be here, Hutchins said. Both Champaign and Urbana will tax marijuana sales at 3% once they're legal January 1st, and each already has a medical marijuana dispensary. Regardless of how much revenue would be generated, Trustee Jan Carter Nickum said he's spoken with residents who were morally opposed to marijuana, and as a former driver's ed teacher, he was concerned about impaired driving. A big fear of mine is that if we pass it, that we're kind of being another group that condones this practice, Nickum said. So that's my own personal belief on this issue. High School Spotlight, Once in a Lifetime? Hardly, Central Senior on Memory Making Role. Walking into Champaign Central High School on Wednesday morning, Price Punkey didn't have to wait long before classmates and teachers greeted him, with high fives, including one from his first-hour math teacher, Matthew Hopkins. He gave me one and said that was pretty cool. Punkey recalled Wednesday afternoon. Cool indeed. The Central Senior has delivered two memorable moments, all in the whirlwind span of 5 days, in helping the Maroons boys basketball team be stars for pick up early two early season wins. Both happened courtesy of late last second three-pointers the 6'3" Punke made under difficult circumstances. The first took place last Friday to lead Central past Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin 88-87 in overtime at the Galesburg Thanksgiving tournament. Punke received a pass from teammate Nate Allen, took four dribbles up the court, and drained a 22-foot three-pointer before the buzzer sounded. The second one transpired Tuesday night during Central's home opening 52-51 win against Decatur Eisenhower at Coombs Gym. This was featured a high degree of difficulty. He caught a pass about 10 feet beyond the three-point line on the right wing, took one dribble, turned, and hoisted a contested three-pointer. Nothing but net. I told my mom afterwards, that's a pretty cool way to have my first home game go, because all of my friends and family were there, Punky said. At Galesburg, it was my family, but teammates and their families, really. Central Basketball's Twitter account, @HoopInMaroons, posted both videos, which had generated more than 13,000 views by Wednesday evening. But those numbers aren't what's important to Punky's parents, Dan and Timmy. My wife and I are going to be the harshest critics, but the thing I like about Price and how he handled this is he knows to put the team first, Dan Punkey said. Of course it was exciting. We were definitely happy for him. Dan and Timmy, as part of the parent group that helps the Central basketball program, were busy after last Friday night's game in Galesburg making sure the team had food. They spent the moments after Tuesday night's game helping collect money from the concession stand, but they still had time to soak in what their son has accomplished through the first 5 games of his senior season. It's really been a blur with the meals we help put together for the team, and one of our daughters has been dealing with a flu bug for a bit, Dan said. It's just one thing after another, but it's something we'll remember, and I'm sure Price will remember for quite some time. Sinking three-pointers is nothing new for Price, who established Central's single-season record when he made 96 last season. Division III in-state schools Elmhurst and Illinois Wesleyan have shown the most interest so far in his basketball ability. Price wants to major in business or financial planning in college once his high school career ends. I definitely did not have any expectations to hit even one buzzer beater this year, let alone 2 in 5 days, Price said. It's just been super exciting to play a ball play like that because you see other kids make plays like that all the time on social media, and to be able to have one of your own is cool. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. University of Illinois student Jacob Ralchich is going out of his way to Provo, Utah, to cheer on the school's volleyball team in the NCAA tournament. He'll use our Snapchat account to take us inside BYU's gym on Friday. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. We caught up with him before he left. How are you getting to Utah? By plane, train, and really anything but an automobile. I'm catching a 3 a.m. bus to O'Hare and then flying to Salt Lake City. From there, I'm taking a commuter train to Provo and then using their local bus service to get around the city. Better yet, why are you going to Utah? Because I'm a crazy Illini fan. I've traveled to every volleyball postseason in my 4 years here. These impromptu road trips, blown tires and all, have been some of my favorite memories I've made in college, and I hope that this weekend is another good one. As soon as my friends and I saw that we were in the tournament field, I immediately started looking for ways to get to Utah. The rest of the group, made up of other crazy volleyball fans, insisted that I was insane. They're not wrong. Are you worried about angry Utah fans? I'm hoping the Utah fans will be nice people, but I'm a troll at heart, especially when it comes to sports. So I'll have fun with it. I definitely won't be quiet. Doesn't help that I'll stick out like a sore thumb wearing a bright orange suit, jacket, and pants. Judge orders 16-year-old detained. A Champaign County judge has ruled that a 16-year-old Champaign boy whom police are calling a person of interest in recent shootings should be locked up while the state takes steps to revoke his probation. On Wednesday, Judge Tom DeFantis heard that members of the Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force found a loaded shotgun in the teen's closet during a court-authorized search of his home Tuesday evening in the 1500 block of Garden Hills Drive. The discovery of the gun, which had a shortened barrel, led to his arrest and to State's Attorney Julia Reitz filing the petition to revoke the probation the team received in June after being adjudicated for a December 2018 aggravated robbery. While police think he may have been involved in recent shootings, they do not consider him a suspect in the Monday night shooting of a 10-year-old Dakari Roberts, who is hospitalized and recovering from 2 gunshot wounds in the back he sustained about 11:30 p.m. Sunday while in his own home on Williamsburg Drive. The 16-year-old has not been charged with any new crimes, just the allegations that he violated his probation by possessing the shotgun and other violations of his probation, including that he had not been in school for the entire month of November, violated curfew, and missed appointments with his probation officer. DeFantis heard that, in addition to the adjudication for aggravated robbery, this youth has multiple police contacts going back 6 years for such crimes as armed robbery, trespass, theft, possession of burglary tools, and resisting arrest. The youth is due back in court December 11th. And we have the Teacher of the Week. Meet Diana Friedman, a second grade teacher at Urbana's Wiley Elementary, who reports to school every day with one goal, to inspire students to become lifelong learners who are motivated and passionate to make a difference and achieve their goals. The most unique lesson that I've taught is the haunted house lesson. This year, I was able to turn our classroom into a haunted house. When the students walked into the classroom, they had to identify the things they could see, hear, and feel. We brainstormed different nouns and adjectives that could be found and seen in a haunted house. I had a realtor join us so she could describe the importance of descriptive words. The students were then able to create their own haunted house listing for the realtor. That's cool. I find my work important because I am helping shape and mold our future teachers. Our future leaders. Teachers have the opportunity to pour into students and not only teach them academics, but also how to be a kind and respectful part of the community. Our community depends on great leaders who are able to collaborate in a respectful and responsible way, using the problem-solving skills they learned in the classroom. I became a teacher because I enjoy helping others find success. I'm passionate about my family. Family comes first, and being a good wife, mother, and role model for my two kids is the most important thing I can do. Class Act. Wiley Principal Jennifer Heinhorst, Ms. Friedman's energy and positivity is infectious with her students and other staff members, which enables her to build strong and meaningful relationships. She uses animation and other nonverbal gestures to keep students focused and on task. Her classroom is warm and inviting. Ms. Friedman is a masterful educator. DUI trial date set for Champagne woman. If convicted, she could face up to 12 years. After hearing about the serious injuries to her passengers and her blood alcohol content, a Champaign County judge Wednesday ruled there was plenty of evidence to try Ashia Marshall on charges of aggravated driving under the influence. Judge Rhonda Holloman set a tentative trial date for February 5th for the 28-year-old Champaign woman whose car plowed through a construction zone September 3rd on Bradley Avenue in West Champaign, went airborne off the end of an under-construction bridge, and crashed into a barrier on the shoulder of Interstate 57 below. In a probable cause hearing that took 7 minutes, Illinois State Trooper Kevin Caskey testified that after the 1:11 p.m. crash that Tuesday, he saw a Jeep Cherokee resting on a slope of a wall adjacent to the west side of I-57 and up against a temporary concrete barrier that kept it from rolling onto the highway. The Jeep went through the construction zone, airborne over the bridge abutment, then first touched on the sloped wall, then came to rest against the concrete barrier, Caskey said, answering questions from traffic prosecutor Brooke Hinman. The construction zone, he said, was clearly marked. I smelled the strong odor of alcoholic beverage on her breath, he said. At the hospital, a blood draw revealed Marshall's blood alcohol content was 0.225, almost three times the limit at which an Illinois motorist is presumed intoxicated. Caskey said injuries to one of Marshall's passengers, Maurice Connolly, 43, of Champaign, included a broken leg, a pooling of blood in the leg, a cut tongue, and a cervical strain. Her other passenger, Robert Spears, 35, suffered acute respiratory failure from two collapsed lungs, a bruise to one lung, and an acute kidney injury. If convicted of the two counts of aggravated DUI, Marshall faces penalties ranging from probation to 1 to 12 years in prison. The penalties are enhanced because of the injuries to her passengers. She remains free while her case is pending. She is being represented by Assistant Public Defender Michael Anderson. We have some area update news. It's drive-through only as restaurant rehabs. For the next 3 weeks, the McDonald's at Neal Street and Kirby Avenue will be drive-through only. Like several of the other McDonald's restaurants in the area, that one is installing new digital kiosks where orders can be placed, then delivered to customers' tables. The lobby is also getting an updated look, manager Marco Herrera said. The Neal Street McDonald's was issued a building permit Monday for the remodeling and is scheduled to fully reopen December 20th. In the meantime, the drive-through will be open 24/7. Annual collection on tap Sunday. Drive-through collections for the annual Toys for Tots Toy Drive will be held in three locations in Champaign and Danville on December 12th from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. In Champaign, donations of new unwrapped toys, gift cards, and monetary donations can be brought to the Administration Center at Carl at the Fields, 3310 Carl Fields Drive South, and WCIA-TV, 509 South Neal Street in the station's back lot. The Danville's drive-through collection will be held at Carl, 311 West Fairchild Street. More than 2,100 toys and $4,900 in monetary gifts were collected last year. First Christian Church, Christmas dinner reservations open. For the 10th year in a row, First Christian Church of Champaign will host a free dinner on Christmas Day for anyone who would otherwise be alone or without a holiday meal. It will be held regardless of winter weather conditions at the church at 3601 South Staley Road. Appetizers will be served at 12:30 p.m. and a sit-down dinner will begin at 1 p.m. Longtime radio personality Jim Turpin will serve as MC of the event. Reservations are requested no later than December 22nd by calling or texting 217-493-9323. Or reserve online by clicking on the Christmas dinner box at fcc-online.org. Those reserving will be asked to give their names, daytime phone numbers, and the number of guests attending. Children under 12 will receive a small gift. To volunteer to help with the dinner, sign up online by December 22nd. Around the area, month's totals include 9 warrants. Paxson, November income from the Ford County Sheriff's Office totaling $84,732, with $73,985 coming from boarding inmates. For the month, the office also issued 33 traffic citations, responded to 16 traffic accidents, and served 9 warrants. Sibley, trustees voted to reimburse Village President Jim Kearney $230 for purchasing fruit, candy, cookies, and some novelties to fill more than 100 treat bags to be distributed to children by the Sibley Business and Historical Association during night out festivities Saturday. About 15 of the bags will be given to shut-ins. Thomas Brule, the school board elected William Wilkin as its new president and Dallas Johnson as VP. The vote came in wake of the resignation of former Thomas Brule board president Jane Sprangle. House Republicans, call made for reform of ethics laws. A handful of Illinois House Republicans on Wednesday called for a special legislative session, or at least greater urgency in the upcoming regular session, to pass reforms to state ethics laws. How can this government possibly move forward with credibility without robust anti-corruption safeguards in place? Representative Blaine Wilher, Republican Beecher City, asked during a Capitol News conference. He was joined by 4 of the more conservative members of the House GOP caucus in arguing that a flurry of investigative activity and federal charges filed against a pair of sitting lawmakers make clear that reforms to state ethics codes and economic interest disclosures are needed to return the public's trust. So far this year, Representative Luis Arroyo, Democrat Chicago, was arrested for bribery before stepping down, and Senator Tom Cullerton, Democrat Villa Park, was indicted on embezzlement charges. He remains in the legislature. Several other state house regulars, including Senator Martin Sandoval, Democrat Chicago, have had their homes or offices raided by the FBI. Sandoval announced November 27th he was resigning effective January 1st. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 5th, 2019. Please stay tuned for Part 2.